particular. Yeah, thank you everyone for coming. I know it's lunchtime, so everything people coming and don't think that would be better. So today, like, I'm really happy to talk to you about something very related to my research and close to my heart, which is related to how we can simulate quantum physics with machine learning. And so the topic of the two talks I'm going to give you today and next Wednesday is going to be related to a framework called variational multi-cover. And it's going to be about the intersection of those variational multi-cover, which I'm going to tell you about, and machine learning. So but first, going deep into that, I would like first to give a quick review of what we saw in the previous lectures and in this course. So before, like, feel free to ask me whenever you want, just talk to your guy for a second. So the first thing we saw in the course is how we can do supervised learning, where the idea is very simple. You have a data set with a bunch of inputs and labels, and you pick a neural network, which is, you can think of as a function with a bunch of parameters. So either you have like a feedforward neural network or a CNN, or as we'll see, recurrent neural network. So pick your favorite neural network that suits your data set, and then you train it using these data sets in order that your neural network can give you the right labels whenever you give it some input. Okay, so that's the idea of supervised learning, and we saw that actually, like, in homework two, which you all did a great job in, so I'm really happy. So in homework two, like in the Eisen model, when you did the training on the Eisen model, you found that, like, with wide variety of the temperatures, like in particular in, like, below the critical temperatures, we found that the feedforward neural network you use here give you the right label, like for a magnetic phase, and once you go past the phase transition, you get the paramagnetic phase. And when you are actually, like, close to the phase transition at the critical points, the neural network gets confused because there's no way to, it's close to the decision boundary where it's hard to distinguish between the two phases. Okay. And also, like, you, as you might have seen, like, in Voyager module lectures, like, we also, in the context of supervised learning, we can also use neural networks to perform the tomography on, like, if you have, like, a quantum computer and you perform a lot of measurements, then given those measurements, you can actually use your neural network to reconstruct the model. Okay? And that's what we use for tomography. Now, for the second pillar of machine learning is what we call unsupervised learning, where given some data without labels, we would like to understand some meaningful features about these data sets, so, or relevant features. So you've seen this example in tutorial number four, where when you use BCA on the Eisen model, you've seen that clusters forming. And the cool thing is that you've seen here that, like, these three clusters correspond actually to the two phases. So two of these clusters correspond to the ferromagnetic phase, and one here corresponds to the ferromagnetic phase. And we found that actually this happens because, like, this axis corresponds actually to the magnetization. So using this unsupervised algorithm, we managed to find that this is the relevance or the parameter to distinguish between the phases. Okay? So the next thing I'm gonna want to tell you, like, the new thing that you will learn in these lectures is something related to reinforcement learning, where the main idea is you want to find, let's not necessarily a neural network, but for the sake of this course, let's say a neural network that minimizes a cost function or maximizes a reward. So let's say you have, like, a quantum many-body system or a classical many-body system. The goal would be here to minimize the energy of that system or find the grounds. Okay? And if you're in the context, like, if you want to maximize the reward, this would be, for example, you play in Super Mario and you want to maximize the score you have with number of lives. Or if you have, like, a quantum computer and you want to prepare some state, you want to maximize the fidelity with respect to the target state. Okay? So that's what we try to do in reinforcement learning. So in this lecture, I would like to talk to you about something very similar in the spirit of reinforcement learning. So you're going to learn more about reinforcement learning in Bolden's lectures. So you're going to see it first, right? And so I'm going to For this lecture, we're going to talk about something very similar that has a lot of similar features to reinforcement learning, but not exactly. So this framework is called variational Monte Carlo, where basically where this framework has like done a lot of has managed to allow us to advance physics of quantum, like the simulation of quantum systems a lot. And this framework is based on what we call the variational principle, which was actually applied to BCF theory in order to explain low temperatures superconductors. So in the first part, in this lecture, I'm going to tell you about this part, and in the next lecture, we're going to see how we can use, in particular, recurrent neural networks in order to apply it to this framework in order to simulate these quantum systems. Okay. So in the next, what I'm going to tell you is what is variational Monte Carlo. So basically, the goal of this framework is that given some quantum unibody system which has some Hamiltonian, so given some Hamiltonian, H hat, we are interested. Usually interested in finding the ground state or the lowest energy state of that photon. So let me write that first. And find the ground state. So this is interesting because you might want, for example, to understand why a super, like, to understand like some features about the state of low temperature superconductor or superfluid. That's why more like this question is very relevant to lower energy things or very low temperature. Okay, so for if you want to find the ground state. And the ground state energy of some Hamiltonian, you basically have to solve the eigenvalue equation, right? Where Eg just should be the lowest energy eigenvalue of that Hamiltonian, right? So the main issue with that, is that it's very hard. It gets exponentially hard hard to solve if the number of degrees of freedom grows. So solving this equation, is exponentially hard. To have an idea about why is that the case, let's assume that we deal with just quantum unibody system of just discrete degrees of freedom, like let's say spin. So if I have just discrete, like let's say if I have n spins, so you take this example, n spins, then my Hamiltonian H hat is going to be just a matrix. So H hat is going to be a matrix, which has size 2 to the n by 2 to the n. Okay? right? So namely, if you want to find the ground state or the ground state energy, you naively would need to diagonalize that matrix in order to find the ground state along with other eigenvalues, right? And this way of finding the ground state is called, in that format, in that structure, it's called exact diagonalization. Okay? So the problem here is that, like, to the best of, like, the best algorithm so far for doing this diagonalization scales as, so complexity of such an algorithm scales as O to the n. Okay, so just to give you an idea about how big is that number, so let's say I have like just 120 spins, then 2 to the n is, roughly speaking, close to the number of the atoms in the universe. That's pretty huge. And if you had only one spin, then you would need like 4 universes. So, of course, we cannot afford that. So, we need to find another way to solve this issue. Okay? So, is this, like, before moving on, is this clear to everyone why this is an issue in physics? And it's exponentially hard, so we cannot solve it this way. Okay? Cool. So next, before actually showing you how we can go over or how we can solve this issue, let me first talk about some motivations about why we need ground states or large energy states. So why do we care about that? So why do we need ground states? Yeah. Before giving you my answer, I would like you to tell me if you have any suggestions. You know, like why do we need to study like study a lot of Hamiltonians and then find the ground states? Do you have any guesses for why it's important?
Once, for example, if you're working on the second quantization picture, and if you already have the ground state, then you can define the creation annihilation algorithm. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. So why do we do like second quantization and all of these work? The end goal would be to understand like the features of this model, right?
So
for this, like we do this like in order to understand like the behavior of quantum devices. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Exactly. So one first one is like to understand quantum or quantum many body systems. So far, like, there are a lot of open questions on quantum many-body system and their behavior. So namely, there's just a big open question about what's the nature or what's going on with this computer behind high-temperature superconductors. And there's a lot of lots of questions about the fraction of Hall effect as well. So being able to do these numerics and will maybe enable us to find clues, or if not, find the answer about what's the nature of those systems. Okay. Another motivation for why this is important is a bit related to chemistry. So this in quantum chemistry, it's very hard to find the ground state of molecules. It's because of the same reason here, like if you're dealing with a molecule, it has a lot of atoms, then it's very hard to find the ground state. And we care about like the ground state in this context because we want to invent, for example, some new catalyst. So let's say you have some reaction, you want to speed it up. Like you want to understand what's the nature of that molecule in order to be able to invent new ways to speed up the chemical reactions, catalysts. And also, this has a lot of important applications in drug discovery. So if we manage, for example, to simulate molecules very efficiently, we open the door for a lot of applications in these areas. And another very important application is also in classical optimization problems. So besides optimization problems, we'll give an Hamiltonian that, let's say, an Eisenhamiltonian with the sum of some random couplings. Times the volume matrices. Then finding the ground state or the lowest energy state of such a Hamiltonian. But that's just a classical Hamiltonian, finding the ground state. Such Hamiltonian, in some cases, is NP-hard. Yeah. And a lot of systems in the world like have such a Hamiltonian, and being able to solve such a Hamiltonian can also help us understand, for example, the nature of glassy materials. This has a lot of disorder. And also its applications in biology, where like is a very an open question that's referred to as the protein folding problem, where basically if you know how a protein folds, you would know, for example, why some diseases occur like Alzheimer's. So still, it's an open question, and it's because of that, by the finding the ground state, such homogeneity is empty. Yeah, by the way, like, do you manage to see my hand right here?
I just know what the nature of what materials?
Oh, glassy materials.
Glassy materials,
okay. And also, this has important interest in economics as well. So, a lot of people are interested in like solving optimization problems with constraints. So, say like you make the most profit given some constraints. And so on and so forth. Also in policy making, you have to take also a lot of lots of constraints in order to make the best policy. So this has applications in a lot of domains in science.
Okay.
So, do you feel like you have questions about this? Yeah.
Yeah, so like, first you wrote the Hamiltonian. Does it have any connection to what you wrote down below? Like, do they all recast their problem in terms of...
Yeah, so like, actually, yeah, it's a good question. So all of these problems actually can be mapped somehow. Something like that. So if you manage to solve this sometime in a general case, it's like in 3D, which is NP hard, then you would be able to solve all these problems.
Oh, okay.
So an optimization problem is actually very generic, and if you manage to find the ground state of that Hamiltonian, you would be able to solve this problem in biology.
Okay.
So indeed, like this problem is very important, and that's why we try to find a way to overcome the exponential complexity. And that's why people are using variational models now. So this motivation, now I'm gonna give you an idea about the principle we use in order to overcome the exponential complexity. And that's what we call the variational principle. Okay. So in order to see how that works, let's just take this eigenvalue equation and then sandwich it with psi g. Okay? If we sandwich this equation by psi g, what we get is Eg, the gross net energy, is equal to psi g h hat psi g. Okay? There's nothing else here, just this transformation. Okay? So now, since the gross net energy is by definition the lowest energy state that can quantum states have, then we can also define it as the minimum over all the possible states in the Hilbert space times of the expectation value of the energy in that state. Okay? We'll take any state, the ground state energy will be the minimum over all the possible coefficients in the Hilbert space. And because of this equation as well, this happens when, so the minimum occurs when psi is equal to psi g. Okay? Is this clear for you? So now, the issue here is that doing the minimum over all these things is very expensive because this search space is very huge. So this space of all possible quantum states for weak functions is a huge search space. In order to overcome this problem, what we do is we propose an ansatz. So we propose an ansatz for what would be the ground state. An ansatz psi lambda that has a bunch of parameters. So okay. And we take this ansatz in such a way that if this is, let's say, the space that's relevant to the ground state, then psi lambda would say space that's almost close to that space. So the ansatz should be expressive enough in order for this space described by the variational or for this ansatz to be as close as possible to that space occupied by the ground state. This is all schematic just to give you an idea about what we want to do. Okay? So by doing this, we can rewrite the ground state energy as the minimum over all the possible ansatz, so which means over all the possible parameters lambda, psi lambda h psi lambda. Okay? So this is approximate, okay? But since here we're taking a minimum over a space that's smaller than the overall space over the big space here, then this minimum here is bigger than the ground state energy. Okay? So the idea here is that the bigger the space, the better this approximation. Okay? And this is what we call the variational principle. So this is basically the idea is just to replace this huge switch case with an ansatz, with a bunch of brackets. Okay. So just like a couple of frameworks concerned at this point. So the cool thing here is that what we did so far is that we mapped this eigenvalue equation to an optimization problem. So let's say you manage to compute this quantity, then what you do is just you try to optimize on the parameters of that to find that quantity, and then it would be like a good estimate of your ground state range. Okay? So what we did is we have mapped. So an optimization
okay.
So let's say we want to find the optimal set of parameters, the optimal set of parameters. Numbers are such that, so let's call this energy E lambda. This will be taking the jargon of this principle. This is called the variational energy. So we want to find the optimal set of parameters lambda such that E lambda star is close to the ground state energy. And because of, and when, actually when we have that, then this means that automatically that our ground state, or our state, or ansatz, then the optimal set of parameters is close to the ground state. Okay? Yeah.
So are we varying the lambda rather than psi lambda?
Oh yeah, like, so basically here, you can think of psi lambda as a function of lambda. Okay?
Yeah, yeah, so that is a point. Yeah. So then when we are doing the variation, the argument we are varying is actually the lambda,
yeah,
or
exactly.
The psi lambda,
yeah,
is
exactly.
Lambda.
Vary the lambda, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so basically the wave function here is like is defined by those parameters lambda.
So I get it.
So by varying the lambdas, you vary the quantum state. You vary the ansatz.
So the ansatz itself is equivalently
so
actually the f lambda, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so we set on the psi lambda,
yeah.
The f lambda. Then we vary the
exactly.
lambda.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay, okay.
Yeah. So now, like, if our goal is to find the optimum set of parameters such that this happens, do you have an idea about how we can do that? How we can find those set of parameters? Do you have any guesses about, like, what's the first thing we do if we want to minimize the quantity? What's the first
gradient
thing?
Gradient descent.
Huh?
Gradient.
Yeah, so that's the most advanced technology, if you like this one. But something more basic. What's the basic thing we do? If you want to minimize the function.
Take derivatives and put it equal to zero.
Yeah, very good. That's actually what we learned in high school. When you have a function, put the derivative to zero. So what we want to do is just solve the equation. Derivative of the variational energy should be zero. And then you try to solve for lambda. Okay? But however, this is, of course, in practical, if you those parameters, like correspond, let's say, like if you pick your ansatz to be a neural network, then solving this equation is, of course, impractical. But the cool thing is that this using this idea, the variational principle was applied actually to the BCS theory. So if you know, like, you have seen like the course of condensed matter. In the BCS theory, you pick an ansatz, that's the BCS wave function, and then you calculate the variational energy. with respect to the BCS Hamiltonian, and then you minimize using this principle. Does it make sense for you? Is some connection between one of these in your plate? Okay. So just by this principle, we can actually understand a lot of physics about superconductors. Okay.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Do we care about degeneracy in the ground state?
That's a good question. So in some cases, of course the ground state is degenerate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have degeneracies, sometimes when you study those Hamiltonians that have degeneracies, you know some properties of the ground state.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the ground state has spur dissymmetry, some ground state is up, the other is even. So you might include those features in the ground state. So let's say you want to tackle the ground state that has even parity.
Mm-hmm.
So you encode this parity symmetry in the ground state.
Okay.
So there you go straight away to that ground state.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have an off ground state, you go up to that point blank. Take an example. Yeah, that's very important. There's a lot of issues about that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the case where they apply this to BCS, do we have what were the parameters? Do the parameters have a physical meaning?
So I remember some of the parameters were related to the gap. So we managed to show that some of the parameters of the ansatz were related to if I remember Bogolyubov bounds, when you had the transition from a superconducting transition, you get a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And basically by varying the parameters you get an idea about what's the gap.
Okay.
But sometimes that's not the case. If you have a neural network with million parameters, then it's very hard to interpret. But the good thing is that when you optimize, you can have an idea about what's the ground state energy, and also what's the nature if you get this ansatz, then you can compute observables, you can compute maximization or correlation functions, and with that you can understand the physics. So knowing the interpretation parameters is not always required.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
Okay, cool.
So, as I said, doing this, solving this equation is not always possible, and that's why, as you said, we do gradient descent. Okay. So instead, we do gradient descent. Meaning that basically just we take a loop, let's say for t steps, and then you change the parameters in the direction of the opposites of the gradients, where here at just the learning rate. Okay? But by just doing this iterative procedure, you can get closer to the ground state. Okay. And now the second remark I want to also emphasize on is that, as I told you here, the ansatz, or we call also in the literature original Monte Carlo, it's called variational wave function, variational wave function. So this variational wave function should be expressive enough in order to describe the ground state. So, and that's why you usually take, so that should be expressive enough. And that's why we take psi lambda to be either a tensor network or a neural network. In the next lecture, I'm going to tell you in particular about how we can use recurrent neural networks.
to find the ground states of quantum many body systems.
Okay.
So yes, actually if I got it, so you find a lambda and then you use the lambda to find the psi lambda somehow.
Yeah, so basically you can think of psi lambda as a black box. Like let's say you're dealing with a bunch of like discrete number of three numbers, say you're dealing with spins. So you have you feed in a configuration of spins. And then what you get is psi lambda of sigma. Okay? So basically specify these parameters, it will give you the value of psi lambda. Okay. Does that make sense?
Why was finding psi lambda star then important?
So finding lambda star is important because you don't want any random state. You want exactly something that's close to the ground state. Okay. Does that make sense for everyone? Yeah.
Like, is there? I think one thing that I'm having a hard time with is just like saying that these parameters like don't have any physical meaning when we're looking at like a physical system or we're trying to find a ground state. Like it seems like we should have like a physical meaning of the parameters in order for it, like if these special combination give you the ground state, that there should be some sort of physical meaning.
Yeah, that's a very good
but
point.
I understand that that's not always the case, but is there like a kind of a way to understand it better or like relax my understanding?
I'll tell you in the next part.
Okay.
So just stay safe.
Okay.
So now, as you see, we can just repeat this, iterative procedure until we converge, and that's when we can manage to find the ground state and the ground state energy. So in order to do so, we need to first estimate the gradients and also the variational energy. The next section will be about how we can estimate E lambda and the derivative of E lambda. So, estimation. So let's first write the variational wave function, and the over the orthonormal basis, let's say the z basis. So you can decompose it this way. So here, let's say those are just spin configuration. Okay. So in order to compute E lambda, which is defined as follows, then you can just plug in this expression here and then develop. And at the end, what you get is just a double sum over sigma and sigma prime, psi lambda star sigma prime, or sigma h sigma sigma prime, psi lambda sigma. Okay? Where H sigma sigma prime is just defined as sigma H hat sigma prime. So that's just a matrix points. You just take the product, the outer product, or the expectation value with exponent. So, okay. And you can think of it as like if H is a matrix, then this is sigma prime, this is sigma, this will be exactly that coefficient here. Okay? Does that make sense for you?
Wait, no, something doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so like if you write H as a matrix.
Sorry, wasn't that didn't make sense. Maybe that doesn't make sense after. I just lost it. So here it should be lambda, and then the sigma is the one that should be prime. Just want to make sure I'm following before. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So now, as you see here, we have a double sum over all the possible configurations in the Hilbert space. So basically, we have 2 to the n by 2 to the n term. Okay, so that's still a problem because we still have an exponential complexity. Okay, so still, even if you map the algebraic problem to an optimization problem, we still have this problem of exponential complexity. Okay, so in order to deal with that, there's actually a very cool trick. It's very simple but very powerful. What you do is just multiply. Yeah, here is a sorry about that. Okay. So we just multiply and divide by psi lambda. Okay. So what you get is psi lambda sigma squared sum over sigma prime d sigma sigma prime psi lambda sigma prime over psi lambda sigma. So this is the same as what above. We just multiply and divide by psi lambda. Okay? Doesn't change anything. Okay? And here, I'm going to call this term E log of sigma. This is what we call the local energy. Just a name. Usually people call it this way. We call that local energy. So it's going to be a sum over sigma psi lambda modulo squared times the local energy of sigma. Okay? So as you can see here, this is a bit familiar to you, like you have a sum times of a probability distribution times some energy. Okay? Or some term. That's what we saw in like one of Lorentz lecture in Monte Carlo. When you have a Boltzmann factor, which is a probability, times some value here. And in order to approximate this sum, what we do is importance sampling. So here, we can do importance sampling. So we draw samples from psi lambda, from the probability distribution psi lambda squared, okay? And we normalize by the number of samples we draw from psi lambda, okay? That's what we call, so this is by the mean of importance sample. Okay? And importance sampling can be done either by Metropolis algorithm. Either by Metropolis or by means of what we call autoregressive sampling. This is algorithm. This is sampling. Okay, so you're gonna learn how. So you're going to learn about this in lecture 2, the next lecture, where when I'm going to talk about RNAs. So just take for granted that you can do this important stuff, okay? So now, we managed to get rid of the exponential complexity in the first sum, okay? But still, we have a problem here. So if you look at the expression of the local energy, it's still the sum over all the possible configurations, okay? But the good news is that, so the good news is that the number of elements a sigma sigma prime that are non-zero given sigma fixed, then the number of those elements is linear in the number of spins. So for any, and that's what physical dimension is. is it just a simple consequence of locality of any physical Hamiltonian? The number of non-zero matrix elements are only linear in the number of spins. So just to see that, let's take an example of the transvestibulizing model. So A1B. So let's say I have a sum from 1, let's say just 3 spins. Sum from 1 to 3, psi, sigma I, t, sigma I plus 1, t minus sum magnetic, transvestibulizing field, h, sum from 1 to 3, the x, fully matrix. Okay? So let's say we start from the configuration down, down, down. And we apply the Hamiltonian on it. If you do this, first, like the diagonal part, the this term is going to act on the, so the first term here is going to act on those spins. The second one is going to act on these spins. And the third one is going to act on these spins. Okay? So at the end, what you get is minus 3 times down, down, down. Okay? And then what you do is you apply those sigma matrix, sigma x matrices on each one of these spins. So first, you flip this spin. And then flip the first spin, and then you flip the second spin. And then you flip the last spin. Okay. You only end up with just three terms, okay, here. As compared to the term, which is 8. Okay. So for this particular Hamiltonian is, as you see here, it's local. So as a consequence of that, the number of matrix elements we have here is only for direct. Okay. That's generic, not only for this Hamiltonian, for any of the components. Okay? So as a conclusion, we went from 2 exponential complexity, like order 2n, to order number of samples that we take here times the number of matrix elements we have here, which, because we need to do sum over all sigma primes, so 5n times the cost of computing sine lambda sigma. Okay? So for each psi lambda, for each configuration sigma, you need to compute psi lambda sigma here. Right? And the compute of when that is fn. So for feed for a network it would be just n. Okay? So feed forward neural network, the cost is just n. Okay? So all you want to see here is that this is polynomial. Okay. So we map an exponential complexity. And hence to the polynomial complexity, and hence we can do exponential. You can do a lot of computations with this. Okay. So now, since we are able to estimate the variational energy, we can do the same trick also to similarly, in a similar manner, we can also estimate the gradients of the variational energy in order to be able to do gradient descent. And we can do it's there. So we can just apply gradient descent multiple times until we find the ground state energy. Okay. So now quickly, I'm going to tell you about the lasting gradient of variational multicolor, which is the zero gradient principle. Okay. So far, I can tell you when do we reach like how do we quantify that we reach convergence? So like how do we quantify? The error defined by like the just like the difference between the ground state and the variational state. Okay. Okay. So that would be exactly the So that would be exactly your question about like the interpretation of the parameters. So here we would like if we manage to like to get as close as possible to the ground state, then like all that matters is just the state itself and not the parameters, because if we're interested in computing observables, then like, if we have like a million parameters or just 10 parameters, we would get the same answer. Yeah, well, do you want that question?
Yeah, so I don't really get why that becomes linear. So you said that there are three terms, but...
Yeah, so like usually like the number, like... like here, you would expect to get to the three terms, right? Because like for each spin, you have two possibilities, and like if you multiply them, you get to the three. So overall, you would expect to get to the three terms. But most of them are zero, and only three terms are non-zero. Okay.
But you're saying that this is true for any...
So just for an equation, I just gave you this example. But this is general for any one. That's why we can estimate the version. Otherwise, it's not possible. So now, to do this, just remember that... If my variational state is exactly equal to the ground state, so if psi lambda is exactly equal to the variational, like the ground state, if the ground state is equal to the variational state, then this is will be true. Okay. So now, if you use the definition of psi lambda there, if you foil, what you get is sum over sigma prime h applied on sigma. First, sign on the sigma prime times sigma h applied on sigma. Okay? And here, you're going to get the sum over sigma. Sum over sigma prime psi lambda sigma prime sigma the matrix elements H sigma prime, which is equal to EG times psi lambda of sigma. That's because here the bases are orthonormal, so sigma prime is just prime product. Okay. So now we are in here. So if you move the side on the now, if you move it to this side, you'll get EG is equal to sum over sigma prime H sigma prime psi on the sigma prime or the sign on the sigma. Less exactly the local energy, okay? On sigma. Let's hold for any sigma, because we could have done this for any sigma. Okay. And the cool thing about, so what we said here is that if our ground state is exactly equal to the variational state, then all the local energies are exactly equal to the ground state energy. And in particular, compute the variance of the local energies, then we'll get zero, since all of them are the same. Okay? And because the variance, so because the variance is usually small, like it's always positive, then the conclusion here is that the closer the variance to zero, then the better the approximation. Sign on the so the closer the variance to zero, the better this approximation. This is what we call the zero variance, exactly the zero variance principle. So we know that we converge the ground state. We know that the variance of the local energies is very, very small. Okay? Now just as a, we have just like 3 minutes because I want to do a demo. So just to illustrate all of what we did here, I wanted to equip demo and like very simple examples. Just to make you like understand like all the concepts we did today. Can we have the screen now, please? Maybe we should do it backside.
No, just wait. I think it might just take them a second. If you do it and they do it, it'll be all right, yeah.
Thank you. Harmonic oscillator. So just for the sake of translation, this is a very simple example, and I want you to see from this example how these concepts are present there. So harmonic oscillator, you have the kinetic term and the potential term. And here I'm setting all h bar and omega to 1, so that the ground state is 1/2, and you know the ground state is just the Gaussian, right? So here, I define my variational state as a Gaussian with a parameter lambda. And in the beginning, I define this parameter to be 100, which is far away from up, right? And then define my harmonic potential, and then for sampling, I define the droplet sampler, I define this number of samples, I define this number of steps, like the number of gradients as I do, and then I sample these configurations, and then using the droplets, and then I compute the variational energy and also the variance, and then I compute the derivatives, and at the end I just do gradients, and I do this like again and again. Okay, so let's see if all this all of what it told me is true. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so you see in the beginning we start from very high, so this is different from 1/2, and we start from a very high like operational energy we expect to get close to here. Oops. And then as you see, we get closer and closer to 1/2. Yeah, and eventually, see, there we are.
Nice.
Yeah, and here we're having your close loop hub, and also the variation for every lambda is also one. And also, if you look at the energy variance to illustrate the zero variance principle, you see here that in the beginning we start for a very large variance, and then as you train, it gets smaller and smaller until you reach zero variance.
Okay.
And so also, if you want to illustrate, like we can also illustrate that in the hydrogen Hamiltonian. So, like in the hydrogen Hamiltonian, you have a similar thing. Like you have this kinetic term, the angular momentum term, and the Coulomb potential. And you know, at the ground state, you have zero angular momentum, so you don't have this term. And you know that the ground state is minus one half. That's because I'm taking this weird system of units. I'm taking the mass V1 and the charge V1. So I expect the ground state energy is minus one half and not minus 13.6. And here, the ground state should be in this form. So that's why I take the variational state in this form with those parameters lambda, where I initialize with those values, where I expect at the end to get one and one. Okay? So here I do the same thing. And over again, let's see if this works. Okay, so similarly, we start from quite high value of the energy. Then as we move on, we get closer to the ground state. Let's hope. Okay. And you see here, we get closer and closer to one. Eventually,
works.
Yeah, so here we're close. Like we managed to find exactly or almost close to 0.5.
What are the cases when it doesn't work?
Huh?
What are the cases when it doesn't work?
Oh, well, yeah.
Wasn't this a convenient choice of function?
So that's actually like this field, like the whole field of like this research, is like mainly managed, mainly based on the choice of the variational wave function. So the ansatz you choose and the parameters you choose are actually what determines the velocity of the.
Yeah, because I mean, like, doesn't this kind of guarantee you're going to get to the?
Yeah. So like, you have to work a lot of it in order to see this behavior. Yeah, they had to work a bit just to get this curve. Okay, and also like same idea as you said before, if you plot the variance, then as you see here, like you get smaller and smaller, right? It's very close to zero. And as you see here, like it's the zero variance principle.
Could you run it with like a bad choice of ansatz, like something just slightly different?
Yeah, so if you choose, for example, like if, for example, you start with, so here, for
just
example, if you start with lambda 1, you start with a negative value, like your exponential kind of blows up.
Yeah.
And so you start with something non-physical. That's like if you have like a growing exponential, then like the optimization doesn't work. That's because it shows something non-physical.
Okay.
So you also have to include a bit of physics if you want to get a good solution. So I hope with all of that you have like some ideas about what is variational multi-coupling. And then in the next lecture, I'm going to like show you how we can use neural networks to tackle more interesting problems like uncorrelated quantum nearby systems. In particular, we're going to talk about how we can use the interactive neural networks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mohammed. Thank you.